Hey everyone, welcome to the TOT Cast brought to you by TipTheTower.com. I'm Crystal Kranitz, and on today's episode, we're going to go through a number of things with a very special guest, Dwayne Watson. Now, Dwayne is heavily involved in Toronto basketball. Don't let his modest demeanor fool you. He does a lot of work. He's a part of MLSC's Open Gym. He's on NBA TV, The Hangout. He's a part of TSN. He's an analyst. He's a writer, host and producer of One-on-One. He does the Raptors post-game show, pre-game show, Soul Shift, the Crown League Commissioner. He is extremely involved in Toronto basketball, so it was great to pick his brain a bit, get his thoughts on the Crown League as a whole, the Toronto basketball scene, his favorite shoes, and we even kicked it and talked about the Raptors for a little bit. I won't go on too long about the whole intro here and all that. I will just get right into the interview, and I'll let you guys hear what Dwayne had to discuss with DeMar and I.
Now joining us on the Tip of the Tower podcast is a very special guest, a man of many hats to say the least. It's Dwayne Watson of MLSC's Open Gym with the Raptors, NBA TV The Hangout, TSN analyst, writer, host, producer of One-on-One, Soul Shift, Crown League Commissioner, you name it, he's probably involved in Toronto basketball. Dwayne, how you doing today?
I'm good, man. Lots of hats, only one head, though. I can't wear them all the same time. Thanks for having me on, man.
No, thank you for coming on to talk with us. We really appreciate it. And also joining me is DeMar, as everybody knows.
You know that we have, like, the names of, like, iconic Raptors, eh? Like...
Actually, yeah.
DeMar.
Yeah,
that's Dwayne, true. Dwayne, Chris Childs.
Yeah.
All Raptors. I know we're down by four. About three. Okay, so obviously the biggest thing you're doing right now in the summer is the Crown League, Nike Crown League.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, in Toronto area, what's it all about?
Nike Crown League's a pro-am, basically. If you've heard of the Drew League in LA, which is the biggest pro-am league that happens every summer, a place where professional athletes from Toronto and abroad can, you know, keep their game refined. They can't play against guys like me or you because we're not elite enough. But, you know, a lot of guys from Toronto or Canada are playing overseas in Europe, or some playing NBA, some playing D-League. So it's an opportunity where, you know, the top-level athletes in the city can kind of have their game and also showcase themselves in front of the city. I mean, a lot of guys play prep basketball in the U.S. They go to college in the U.S. So people back home don't really get a chance to see them unless it's like once or twice during the NBA season. So this way it's a really cool, close environment, and guys are playing ball and having fun.
Where did the idea originate to start something like this?
I would have to say probably Charles Year with Nike. We had a conversation like really early days and talked about something like this, and we just kind of like nurtured the idea from there. But it's definitely a Nike initiative, and it's been great for the city. I mean, this is the second year. And, you know, we've had like guys like Anthony Bennett, Kelly Olynyk, Andrew Nicholson, James Johnson. A lot of big guys have come out to play amongst everyone else. Not these guys are bigger than most, but like name guys, as I use my air quotes.
Well, to use like the name guys, for me personally, I love watching guys like Mick Cabongo and Junior Cadogan. They're, for a lot of people that don't know, Toronto legends at the high school level before they departed.
Yeah.
Aside from them, how do you determine who plays in the Crown League?
Well, yeah, definitely want to give credit to the Toronto legends because those are guys that have done stuff on a level that people aren't even familiar with. So there's lots of guys in that realm that fit in beyond the name guys. But basically it works, each team has their own GMs and they select their guys. And I mean, for you, if you guys get a Tip of the Tower team, you guys don't want to lose. So you're going to recruit the best guys you can, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's the mandate. So everyone wants to kind of, they all have connections and networks within the city and know the players. But, you know, it's your name on the team. So you want to make sure you get the best players possible. And if that means, like, you know, you got to sit out a week tomorrow, it's like, because we got Mike coming in,
right. It's
what's going to happen.
That makes sense. Because I was wondering how, like, One Love TO, for example, they get quite a bit of guys that come through.
Yeah, they do. But also what we did this year, we had a combine. So basically, a lot of guys were like, how can it be in Crown League? And, you know, if you don't know the GMs, it's kind of hard. So we had a combine of about like 50 guys, whittled it down to 12, and we had 24, and we had a game, officials the whole night, and the GMs were scouting and watching, and they drafted guys out of the combine. So because that way they found guys they might not have heard of, because some guys are playing CIS, some guys are just like, you know, underground guys, but you know they might find a fit for the team. So they drafted about 9 guys from the combine that are playing in Crown League.
It's quite a bit.
It's like a mini NBA, basically.
Yeah,
that's kind of what it is, though. It's really like a top level basketball experience for people in the city, which hasn't happened before.
For players that are interested next year in trying to get to the combine, where would they go to find out information about this?
Follow me on Instagram. No, I'm kidding. I mean, one thing is, it kind of happened a little last minute, a little later than we would have liked. But we're going to do a better job of communicating that the combine is going on and give people more time and getting, like, kind of the best assessment. We don't want anyone complaining and say they didn't get a chance to go compete. So that'll probably happen. Like, Crown's usually in July, so we'll probably look to do it in June. But definitely, like, you know, plug in the same channel so to keep the word out.
Okay, because I hear a lot of people rumblings in the stands of, I can play against that guy. This guy's trash is all I hear is from... Of course. Certain fans. But you know what, though? Names,
when you hear that, even when you watch NBA games, you hear the same thing, right? Yeah. I mean, like, everyone thinks they're better, but by and large, a lot of the guys at Crown are getting paid to play basketball, when they're not there.
A lot of pros.
So it's not like... It's not like it's guys like me or you. No offense. I'm not saying you can't play.
That's it.
But, I mean, you know, I think yeah, I mean, you're always going to have those people saying that. Or people are always going to say, I'm good enough. I'm better than this guy. I should be playing. But, you know, I mean, there's reasons why everyone's there, right?
The combine is, I guess, is a way to prove it if you really want to.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I know there's a couple of guys who specifically talked to me about it, and they didn't make it. And then I heard after they were saying, oh, it's politics. I go, it's not politics because, you know what, if you play your best – you know, cream will rise to the top. That's the thing. So if you show up there, people will look at you and definitely want to pick you up. So that's an opportunity to kind of like prove it. All those guys who say that, it's like, did they try and get in there?
Probably not.
This is your opportunity to do it. So that's the opportunity to showcase yourself.
They're YMCA legends and legends in their own mind most of the time, to be honest.
Hey, exactly.
On a semantics level with the Crown League, where did the court design come from?
Court design came from Nike. We worked with an agency called Victory. They've done a number of stuff with Nike for a while. And the biggest thing was to represent Toronto. This is kind of like, you know, this Crown League is really Toronto's own. They wanted to do something to represent Toronto and do something a little different. And obviously, Ryerson is like an iconic gym in the city, but definitely need to get freshened up. So I think obviously it's one of the first things that stands out to people when they see it. It looks fantastic. And, you know, it's more going to the city, Ryerson.
I know you say Kerr Hall's an iconic gym in the city.
Yes.
Is it more iconic than Jarvis, though? Jarvis is...
in
its own right, it's pretty good.
In its own right, it's definitely pretty good. The problem is we've kind of outgrown Jarvis, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're too big.
Jarvis was fantastic the first year, but based on, like, the last week in Crown League, which I'm sure you're at,
yep.
It was a little warm in there.
Oh, it was very hot.
Exactly. Yeah, and it was a lot of people, and I think that, you know, like, if we went back to the first week, it would be just too crazy. And even the gym, the baselines are really tight.
Yeah.
I mean, it has a lot of history, for sure. Kerr Hall was, like, the Mad at Me before Mad at Me, right? I mean, that's kind of where all the big level events were happening there. So it has its own history there. But, you know, Crown just kind of needs to kind of evolve and grow with it and get a bigger place.
Is Kerr, like, the last stop? Or are you guys
there
yet?
Is there a next step?
I can't divulge that at this time. You never know. I mean, one thing that's going to happen is, I mean, the walls are going to stay the same, but the floors are going to probably change just because if you notice, it's all basketball lines, and if volleyball is in there, other sports, they have to have a line. So, but, you know, definitely... a lot of money was invested in that gym just to kind of like freshen it up, which I know Nike was really important for them to do, kind of like get back in that regard.
It looks good. I mean, it's no Rose Hill gym in the Bronx, but I like Rose Hill's a personal favorite of mine. That's why.
It still looks beautiful right now, especially the court where you can see the skyline.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and honestly, it's the best gym in the city in that regard, I think. I mean,
yeah.
Like in terms of its look and feel, I think it totally is tops.
So you're entering the playoffs now for Crown League.
That's right.
I know you guys had the last week off because of OVL Bounce and
yep.
Caravan and all the extracurriculars. Yep. For those that are trying to attend this week and fans that haven't yet, pitch to them why they should come to Crown League.
You probably got a bit of it before the playoffs started. You obviously probably got some of it during OVL Bounce, but Crown League is the best basketball league in the city where it's everyone is playing for bragging rights. I mean, One Love Tio, who won last year, is not going to be in the playoffs this year. So it just shows you how quickly things can change, but... they're playing for pride. They're playing for that name. Everyone likes the bragging rights. And, you know, as you see, you talk about that gym, you talk about week after week and what it is. It's the best basketball in the city on that level. And you also don't, with the playoffs, more guys can show up. So, I mean, I don't know anything, but obviously looking at it, you know, the closer you get to the end, teams want to get the best players possible. So you never know who may show up.
Nice little tease there.
You've seen it though. I'm not even saying anything you haven't seen.
That's
it.
Are
you
going to
show up? I know you're a mega city
star. I would be working. I'm not on that level of basketball play. I'm sure Akil admits to that as well.
I don't know, man. Akil's Mr. Basketball to you.
He is Mr. Basketball, period. He is. But, hey, I mean, like these guys are, like I said, this is what they do. They play basketball for their livelihood. They have a love of the game, but they're professionals.
Let's segue a bit into the Toronto basketball scene as a whole. There's somebody you used to play against. His son is actually pretty damn good. I asked him about you. He's considered like the next prodigy. For those that don't know, I'm talking about Rowan Barrett Jr.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on Rowan Barrett?
Thank you.
RJ Jr.
RJ dropped 30 points. It'll be a bounce last week. I forgot who was playing. I want to say it was an NBA player he was playing against, but that kid is like infinitely talented. He's just scratching the surface. He's young. You know, I think having his dad, who's kind of been through it all and seen it, has really done a good job keeping him grounded. But I mean, like, you know, he's already the number one draft pick and he's not even graduating yet, right?
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about his game. I mean, obviously he still has some growth to do from his game, but he has a lot of the tools, the mindset, and I mean, he's young. He's still going to grow and continue and get bigger and stronger. I mean, this is a kid who played with he's on the cadet team and did training camp with the men's national team and held his own.
And did really well.
Yeah, so that just speaks to the game that he's got.
With him, though, he went to Montverde Academy this year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the next guys, air quotations,
right,
in Canada or Toronto specifically, they leave.
Yeah.
How do you keep guys like this in the city? Or can you even?
You know, it's tough. I think you can, though. I think it's changing where the prep schools are getting better. And the competition is getting better. So, I mean, if you look at a school like AI, they're playing a lot of the top schools in the States. They're traveling a lot. So there's that opportunity where they can get that kind of experience, the training, the facility they have, and playing against those teams and the exposure, and stay home. Like, Thoughtmaker's another example of a guy. Like, I mean, he didn't play his whole career here, but, you know, he played for AI, and he still got that exposure, and he was, like, a lottery pick in the NBA. So I think now it's starting to change where if your scheduling can be there, you can travel and be get the exposure that all the U.S. kids get, you can stay home and do it. But, I mean, Montverde is also the top school in North America. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know.
Like, I know the prep circuit will run with, like, Montverde, St. Benedict's,
right,
like, Wasatch. There's a lot of teams that
right
are going to play each other, even
yeah
though they're geographically not close.
Right.
The OSBA in Ontario now, they're trying to make this with, like, Michael Carr, AI.
Yeah.
What other schools could be added to that to make it more competitive? Or is there? I just feel like it's kind of a unique setting.
Well, I think the prep environment is obviously more basketball-focused. And, I mean, obviously, the OSBA has – they've added a couple more teams. And there's also another prep league that's starting as well with a number of teams. And I think that kind of attention to basketball helps because it's like, you know, if you're playing AAU and you're going to school and it's like your basketball coach is the baseball coach or he's a geography teacher who's not really into basketball, you want that dedicated attention and you're getting it at a lot of these prep schools. So I think that's what's changing and I think it's going to help because some kids go down to the States and they're not ready to, you know what I mean? And then look, then what happens, right? So sometimes you want to have that structure, that confidence to be home where you can do what you got to do as opposed to like going down there, plunging early and not knowing, and then it's like you're in a system where it might not work for you in that regard.
That makes sense. I'm kind of on the fence a bit with them keeping players here just because if you don't finance it,
right,
like we don't have the facilities a lot of these American schools have, and AI, for example, does, but outside of that...
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, every situation is different.
Yeah.
I think AI is kind of an example you can look to that has like the facilities and has the scheduling and has the infrastructure there.
Because it's tough for a TDSA school to kind of break the board and go on their own.
Yeah, it is.
Because you got to fund yourself then after that.
So. It's interesting, my friend.
It is.
It's a tough dynamic. I mean, we have that. Unfortunately, the brain drain happens in so many different areas and basketball as well, too. But I think it's a little like it's developing here where it's not as bad because, I mean, 3 years ago, it wasn't even an option to stay here at all.
Yeah. Zero.
So now it is, which I think. And people are also exceeding. Like, look at Jamal Murray. He never left.
Yep.
You know what I mean? I mean, he's a rare player, but there are success stories that you can point to.
So talking about some of the past guys here, a lot of the times where I personally would discover them is like a kid was playing out on the parks.
Right.
Playing on the courts, going down to like even Harborfront.
Right.
What's your favorite courts outdoors? I'm working on a piece about this. Where are your personal favorites in the city?
I probably have two. Harborfront, which is obviously the court.
Yeah.
I mean, that, to me, that's the court in the city where like if you play, like that's where you got to kind of like...
You have to prove yourself.
Basically. Yeah, for sure. And I like... I forgot the official name of it.
Underpass?
No, I hate Underpass. Underpass is a fantastic court. It's great visually. Every commercial, every promo
yeah,
I
cool.
use, it
yeah,
looks
exactly.
great.
As a
the courts are too close together.
Okay.
The rims are too thick.
It's double rimmed, yeah.
And I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the court. I don't like playing there. I mean, it looks great. Don't get me wrong. I've shot tons of stuff there.
Right.
It's not a real court. I wouldn't want to play there. I mean, I like playing in a full court situation. So, I can't. Esplanade court. I forgot what's it called again? Esplanade in like... It's not that far from here. It's called. It's named after someone. You know the one with the mural.
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. That's what you're talking about. The name of Aidsman.
Oh, it's like it's a guy's name.
It's not one of the VC courts.
No, it's not.
Yeah, no.
I forgot. Actually, MLSC did refurbish the court. But
it looks nice.
I want to say Dave Robbie, but that's not it. But anyways,
it's just like literally down the road.
I know. Anyways, that's kind of. I think that's my favorite court. I've been there a lot of times.
But you're like a full court guy through and through them, by the sounds of it.
I don't have the shot. I got the hustle, the energy, man. I got to run the floor, run the lanes, do all that stuff.
So you're JYD 3.0 because we already have JYD. And then
Damari Carroll. Personally, Damari, I don't – get have your own name. You don't need for 2.0.
He's
the
swag daddy, man.
For
some reason, been that guy.
Be your own guy, man. You don't have to have, like, someone else's name. Like, come on, man. Like, when you're 2.0, it's like – Anyways, come with another name. Swag Daddy? I'm not a fan of that either.
But I'm not really a fan of it either, but he's wearing some exotic stuff.
Oh, he's always been the stylish guy.
Though. Yeah.
Trying to think of where else I like, though. What about you? Those are my two.
For me, Harborfront.
Harborfront, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't mind the underpass. And then, I know.
It's
I know
okay.
You
it's okay.
It's
we
okay.
have differences. We have differences. To each other own.
Why do you like underpass, then? Why don't you mind
it's
it?
It's just quaint. Like, it's got, like, a nice setting to it. It looks nice. And the half court.
Yeah,
it's
that,
not about the basketball.
No,
obviously.
It's the aesthetic.
Aesthetically, that looks nice.
Oh, aesthetically
it
pleasing.
Aesthetic looks nice.
Yeah, for IG, it looks great. I
don't even take that many IG photos.
Follow me. No,
there's, like, what? I'm trying to think. The VC courts in Rexdale used to be nice, like out by the airport there, but then the neighborhood changed and everything kind of went downhill with it.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's a lot of courts that are cool, but, you know, in terms of, like, playing and competition and knowing,
yeah,
I think that's the spots.
This is completely off topic,
yeah.
But researching you a bit, I found that you used to be in the music industry.
Yep.
Our opening song is Chauclair, Let's Ride.
Uh-huh.
I heard that when the song went gold, a certain Dwayne Watson got a plaque from Mr. Chauclair. Is that true or no?
Oh, yeah. I have it in my house.
What's the backstory with that?
I used to work... I worked at Chauclair as a record label. Chauclair was on my label. Yeah, EMI, yeah. So, we were on tour in Thunder Bay, and his DJ could have come, and I actually had to DJ for Chauclair for one show. And it's like, I'm not a DJ, but, I mean, it was cool. That's kind of like my little trivia there, but... yeah, I mean, that time was a great time for him and his career, and, you know, he was really huge. Reebok, Shooty, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, and it was good in terms of, like, putting Canadian hip-hop in the map in a major way where a lot of Canadian labels weren't really supporting. Like, a lot of people were doing independently. So the fact that a Canadian label gets behind a guy and, you know, deliver a gold success to him off of, you know, hit singles and the work he's done was great. Kind of almost what's happening with basketball now where there's a lot more infrastructure and support.
Who else did you work with, actually, before I even transitioned with it?
You and Charles ever collaborate?
Charles is in your way?
Yeah.
Not directly. I mean, like, we did a lot of stuff together, but not directly an artist.
Yeah, okay.
But, I mean, like, I was in the scene, so, like, before I worked at EMI, I worked at this independent label called Beat Factory, and, like, so I worked with, like, Cardi and the Sox and the Rascals and a bunch of other guys.
Was that your Northern Touch? Was that you in the background?
No, I was not. My man Big C, who put me on, actually, that was actually his idea.
That's
Northern
huge.
A down Gold Saga, Big C, Puff Sweet. Yeah. It was that whole concept was his idea. So, it was a good time, man. It was a great time for music in Canada. There was tens of great artists on that, too.
Why did you make the transition from music to basketball?
They say it's a music business, and you always have to remember that. And it started becoming more business and music.
Oh, okay.
And I mean, I still had a passion for the music. I mean, it's a reality. It's business. And especially when the internet age and downloading happened, it became more about the dollars and the bottom line as opposed to the talent. And I wanted to change. I mean, basketball was always a passion of mine. I was doing some freelance writing before that. And they were, you know, cutting back on people. It's like, instead of giving the guy who's been here for 20 years, has a mortgage to pay, a package, and he has no next steps,
right,
give it to me and I'll try and figure out what I can do next. And you know, I left and I was like, oh, I'm going to be like a brand marketing agent for players and stuff, whatever.
Right.
That didn't happen very quickly.
$100?
Well, you know what the funny thing is? That it's like, that was like 7 years ago and there wasn't really, at that point, it was like Canadian players was like Jamal and Steve Nash.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the corporate Canada wasn't really even looking at basketball at that point, right?
I remember Steve Nash on, like, Much Music back in the day for the national team,
dribbled the ball. Yeah, talking
crazy
to Oliver,
flow.
I remember that. Yeah, exactly. That was, yeah. So,
it's the best version of Steve Nash with his super long hair.
Yeah, dropping down.
Yeah. But, media was always something I was interested in, and I felt like there wasn't enough exposure for basketball in this country. I mean, like, you see it. I mean, what you saw back then, it's changed a lot now, but, there was a time when there wasn't even box scores in the newspaper. Or like highlights were at the end of SportsCenter.
Right.
So, just giving a voice to the sport from people who kind of came up from the sport was kind of my thing, and that's kind of what it's evolved into now.
So I'm guessing that's how you kind of found Slam magazine at the time.
Well, I was always a fan of Slam, right?
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, back in the day, Slam was the be-all and end-all. Like, Slam was the internet for basketball.
How'd you get into that?
I got into Slam actually because it's funny because I knew a guy who did a lot of stuff with Slam, and he recommended me, and I pitched the editor, got my opportunity, I pitched him on a bunch of stories, and he's like, yeah, we got people doing that. Because at Slam, it's like there's so many guys there. It's like, if there's a Kevin Garnett story back then, everyone's all over it.
Yeah.
So I realized that I had to kind of have like a different perspective because everything, pretty much everything's already covered, right? So I basically approached him on doing a blog on doing basketball films. So cool. So at that time, 30 for 30 hadn't even really started yet. So he's like, you sure? There's some stuff in there? I'm like, yeah. So I would basically talk about like upcoming basketball films or interview like the directors or players in the films. And then 30 for 30 started and he's been doing more content. And then obviously it became easier and easier for people to make films and documentaries. So that was kind of becoming a thing where they would get stuff and they would send it to me directly. And I formed a relationship with Ben Osborne, the editor. Mm-hmm. And then from that point, it was just like, okay, like now, like there's no other way I would be able to form that relationship without doing this blog where I kind of like kind of prove myself. And then it's like, hey, well, we're doing Raptor Story. So obviously I know you're the guy, I almost said Mr. Basketball. You're the guy in Toronto. So, you know, let's do some stuff. So, you know, and like, I've got a good relationship with those guys and, you know, obviously the aid, you know, I've been doing a lot more freelancing before, not as much now, but, yeah, I mean, still to write for like the Basketball Bible was kind of like a big deal.
Yeah, it's a huge deal.
Yeah.
What's your favorite short film or even documentary?
Basketball?
Yeah.
I saw on your Tumblr you had like a whole bunch.
You like are like the Nardwar of basketball, man. This guy's like on my stuff, man.
You didn't have a Len Bias one though. I didn't see that one on there. Were you a Len Bias fan? That was a sad story.
You know what? You know what? It's like this is gonna sound really judgmental, but to have that opportunity and talent and ability and to throw it all away, not that like I don't give a fuck about Len Bias, but it's like you kind of threw his shit away, you know what I mean? So not that too bad, but not that the story wasn't good. But, I mean, like, Hoop Dreams to me, like, I remember, like, Hoop Dreams is obviously really old, but I remember Hoop Dreams. I remember, like, kind of thinking that, oh, yeah, I want to be in the NBA and stuff, whatever. And then, like, seeing what these guys went through, like, it was a great story. I'm like, I mean, people universally say Hoop Dreams is one of the best documentaries, period, not just basketball, because it was a great storytelling story. But that's definitely a really good one. One that I really liked, Jonathan Hawk, anything he does is pretty much dope. The Five Slam Pajama one that he did on North Carolina State.
Yeah.
And Jim Valvano and his story. And I had no idea that him and Krzyzewski were that close.
Me neither.
And I was like, holy cow. And just the path they went through, but the way they told that story I thought was really good too.
Yeah, there's so many good ones. Even like the I Hate Christian Leitner this year, the 30 for 30.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much like UNLV and Tarkanian and those guys despise Duke. And everybody else for that matter.
Yeah, I know.
Like I knew it was bad.
But like man, they hate every single fiber of Duke's being.
Basically. But I mean, I think 30 for 30 was so great because it just like, there's so many sports stories that got told, whether basketball or not basketball. You know, and like, there's things that as sports fans we're so close to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the Bad Boys or all that stuff. Like,
oh, that's
I mean,
a really good one. Yeah. Even Jordan riding the bus for baseball.
Yeah. You realize that with exactly. What I like about it too is that it's not just like the obvious story, like, you know, Allen Iverson, like they didn't say, oh, this is the 72-10 Chicago Bulls. Like, we all know that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Show me a different side, different perspective.
People didn't know the like AI. They didn't know the fight he had in the bowling alley.
Exactly. Or even like Jordan on the bus. Yeah. All that stuff. That was a great story.
Want to talk Raptors for a bit?
Always, man. Whatever you guys want, man.
You're always about Raptors?
I'm always about basketball talk,
man.
Oh,
man. Yeah, we could do this for
hours. We were doing it like half an hour before we got on.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you think about their offseason? It was kind of quiet. A lot of people were upset.
Disappointing. It was disappointing.
Really? Disappointing?
Oh, come on, man. Like, we needed a four.
Who could we get, though?
Not my concern. We need a four and we need to get better. And I'm saying we. And I don't usually say we, okay? The Raptors need to get, I mean, we knew losing Bismack was going to happen. Yeah, we're fine, right? That at this team's best, they can't beat the Cleveland Cavaliers, which is fine. They're the champions. But they're the bar. They're the best team. We know they're going to be in the finals next year, right? So that's the team they have to beat. So, I mean, I would have loved Paul Millsap. Didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess Gasol would have been okay, although I could concerns defensively.
Yeah.
Sullinger is going to be better than Scola.
If he loses the weight.
Yeah,
if he loses the weight. Even if he doesn't lose the weight, he's better than
Scola.
He's
better than Scola. Yeah.
But he's going to lose the weight. You know why? He saw everyone get paid this year.
Yeah.
He saw, he could have easily got that dumb money that was going around this summer. And he did.
Revis
Vasquez,
right? Man.
Exactly. So I think for him, he's going to get, and you know, which, like, this is a 1 year. It's going to be the same thing as Biyombo's situation again. Which is fine because we still have to find that player first. But I just feel like, I'm not saying that they messed up, but I kind of felt that I really wanted to trade the picks. I didn't want the picks. Because, you know, we got a lot of young talent on this team right now. And Jonathan Five has been a great tool for them. Trade those two picks and get a four that can come in and start and put Pat Patterson on the bench where he's more effective.
Do you really think Patrick Patterson should be playing from the bench instead of starting? Yeah.
Yes. Did you watch the playoffs?
Yeah, but this is
he doesn't even want to start. If he was here right now, he said, I feel more comfortable coming off the bench.
I don't understand why, though.
I don't understand why either. But so this is the thing. I thought, and don't forget, at the beginning of the season, everyone thought he was starting.
Right? Yes.
Everyone thought he was starting. He lost the starting job to Luis Scola.
Right.
And I mean, to Luis' credit, he had a great start to the season, Luis, right? Mm-hmm. He played good. But come on, man.
Old legs, they set in.
Yeah, but I think that like if Pat was cut to be the starter, he would have had that job last year.
Last year, yeah.
And when he says that he feels more comfortable, then it's like, you got him. That's what he says and he feels. Whatever.
So Sullinger is going to start then, you're thinking, because this guy over here has the biggest distaste for Jared Sullinger. It's ridiculous.
It's not the biggest distaste. I just feel like, he has to lose the weight, right?
Agreed.
So it's either he's on the Kyle Lowry plan,
Hopefully he is.
Or his shorts are going to be stapled to the bench because he's not going to be able to guard anybody. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tougher for him to guard stretches for sure because he's not that quick. But he has the advantage on the offensive end, right? I mean, he's a better rebounder than – he's going to be one of the better rebounders in this team. He can work at post. He has a bit of mid-range.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to start because, don't forget, Pat Patterson would be on – he's not on the bench that long, really, right?
That's true.
So it's like – but he's going to come in – but he just doesn't, like, feel comfortable starting the game.
Yeah, it's just like –
so
maybe
it's almost like mental in a sense.
Yeah,
exactly,
it's
right?
Like the spotlight.
But I think Sullinger can give you some meaningful minutes, and I think that – you know, he's not going to be like an all-star or anything like that, but I think he's going to do enough. And I think that he's been starting. Mm-hmm. He's going to continue to start because they need him coming off the bench doesn't help Pat Patterson at all.
Right? I know, but he was – when he was on Boston, he was starting next to Amir Johnson.
Right.
Like, Jared Sullinger
was
playing
the center. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He can't really do that now because Jonas is the
exactly,
center.
Exactly, right, yeah.
Might help him too, though.
Right, okay.
I think it's going to work. I mean, I'm not hating on the summer because – it worked out being a very low-risk move with potential high reward,
mm-hmm.
and it's still an upgrade over the current situation. My concern is that this team is not as good as they were last year, and the East has got a lot better.
Yeah, so, especially Boston.
Yeah, I mean, like, even, like, Indiana, with Jeff Teague, Thaddeus Young, Al Jefferson, they still got Miles Turner. New York, I mean, I'm not saying they're better than the Raptors, but they got better. You know, Chicago,
Detroit.
There's a lot. Yeah, Detroit, Orlando.
Yeah.
Like, there's so – Milwaukee's poised to get better.
Yeah, so.
So there's so – like, the Raptors aren't the second-best team in the East anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they were hands down.
I think they're still top four.
They though. Have to – yeah.
Yeah, it's top four and a tight – like, it's tighter than last – even last year it was still, like,
yeah,
you know, 2-8 was kind of tight, whatever.
Yeah.
It's even tighter this year.
Because I asked Amari Carroll at his camp about the East getting better. And he goes, who's saying that?
Like, how are they not outside, getting better,
like,
though?
He goes, it's outside noise and hype. And I was – which it kind of is. I mean, made fun of the Knicks for a bit.
It's hard to tell what your position is like when you're in the trenches, you know, because you're encased with
like
your entire.
Well,
entire
he also feels that they're still the second best team in the conference, which he should. I mean, that's the right attitude to have. But you just look at, I mean, chemistry is going to be the issue with how these teams, because there's obviously so much change during the offseason and how these teams play together and how they work. This team doesn't need much tweaking aside from Sullinger coming in, really.
Right.
But, you know, on paper, it's going to be tough for these guys. And I mean, I'm not saying they can't do it, but I see it very, very tough for the team to get back to the conference final.
At this point, they're going to have to rely on like development from the talent that they already have on the floor. So DeMar DeRozan, Jonas Valanciunas,
Norman Powell.
And my concern is
because they're still young. That's the best thing about the team is that the majority of the team is young, other than Kyle Lowry and DeMar Carroll. So they can kind of rely on improving from the inside.
Well, DeMar Carroll has to kind of have the season we expect him to have.
He's got to stay healthy.
He's got to stay on the court.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, the thing is too with DeMar and Kyle gone to the Olympics, which is fantastic for them. But if I'm like Masai, I'm like I don't want them to go because they had such a long season. You know, they've had a couple of injuries.
Miles, man, it's Miles.
Yeah,
it's
same
legs.
Like that's the reason why LeBron and Steph Curry didn't go.
Oh, and half there, right? More than half the team.
Yeah,
but I mean, I think conversely though, I find that I mean, I don't have the numbers in it, but every year that players go to the Olympics and they come back, they have better seasons. And I think there's a couple things that happen where they're around elite players and pick up on habits and just attitude and mindset and whatnot. And also they're playing against like top guys all the time.
Best of the
best. They're forced to get better.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to help those guys.
I think it's great for DeRozan, man.
Yeah, the best time for DeRozan to do this.
Well, I mean, I think, I don't know. I mean, I think, I don't want to say DeMar's peaked. I think he's continuing to grow and improve every single year. To me, the only thing for DeMar is a three-point shot.
Yep.
So I don't know if that's going to happen over the camp of the summer or him being in the gym just taking shots.
Right.
But, you know, I think those guys need to grow, but I think the window or the whatever opening, the gap within growth isn't as big as the other guys, really. Like, Damari being healthy, or Norman Powell taking another step, or JB taking another step, which he was kind of doing both times he got injured and then got stopped. Those guys gotta improve. Like, if Kyle and Damari had the same season there last year, they're still fine.
Yeah. Right?
Those are the guys that step up and spot up.
Are the Raptors still in that window of opportunity, or is that yet to come?
I think it is, because when your best player is getting older, you've got to act on it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, which is Kyle Lowry, in my opinion. So I don't think they can wait 2 years to try and make that push. That's why I say trade the picks. Because if you can trade the picks, and no one was really available, but if, like, say they got...
They were trying to make this huge push for Serge Ibaka, and there was
whole
story.
The problem is that they wanted
too much. They wanted Norman Powell, Terrence Ross.
Yeah, they wanted too much, which is ridiculous. But I mean, if they got Serge Ibaka on this team, then hey, they can compete.
He'd help.
So
they had 4 first round picks, though. Like, they had 2 this past year, 2 this year coming up.
Yeah, they
got assets to move. They got a lot of young guys like DeLon Wright, Powell.
So,
guys you can package.
I'm not saying they're in trouble, but I think that this team is going to take they had a successive franchise best, right? It might not happen this year, so.
I feel like they're going to take a step back.
Right.
Like,
so
it's just like.
Yeah, but they overachieved last year, right? Like, there's no denying that.
Did they? No.
I think so. I think they overachieved slightly.
Slightly.
Like, not a lot, but
like
regular season or playoffs more so?
Regular season? Playoffs, they grinded out 7 games with everybody.
You can say that I think it would be easier to say that they overachieved in the postseason.
Yeah, they're a good team. I thought, like,
7.
They played all the top teams well. They took care of home court. Like, I mean, what? I don't think they overachieved last year.
It's just like they played.
I think no one expected them to be in the conference finals.
Yeah,
nobody did.
The East was terrible.
Did you expect them to be in the conference finals?
Honest to God, before it started, I said I expect them to be there just based on how bad the East
before
is.
What?
And
the playoffs started before the season started.
No,
before
like
the
playoffs,
yeah
of course.
Mid-season.
They were trending good.
Then when Chris Bosh was out and everything,
But at the beginning of the season,
second
round, just give me that.
Right, so that is kind of an I mean, well, they did what they're supposed to, but they did kind of overachieve because no one thought they were going to get that far.
Yeah,
I mean, everyone thought, 50 wins or what are they at? How many wins?
57, I think it was?
Yeah,
56.
So
56, I think.
Right,
sure.
So the win total wasn't that surprising to me, I don't think. Actually, no, I thought it would be down a bit. But
they were neck and neck with the Cavs almost till the end.
Yeah, exactly.
For first seed in the East.
So, but now what? Now you have to keep that up, right?
Yeah.
So, you don't see that happening with the Thunder or the Warriors and stuff.
There's always no drop-off, yeah.
Yeah, so it has to be continued, but it's tough because they lost Biombo, who was really big for this year. And, like I said, I think Damari Carroll is almost, not the X factor, but he's the guy, if he can play like how we've seen him play, they're in much, much better shape.
Yeah, he can help. He's really versatile, too.
Yeah, exactly. And he even said he was trying to shoot 40%.
Yeah, well, he told me he wants to shoot bare minimum 40% from 3.
That's good. It's what you want to hear, though,
sky
right?
High. Yeah.
Hey, but you know what, though? His 3-point shot would definitely help open up the floor for these guys. I mean, that's
I mean, Patrick Patterson missed a ton in the playoffs, and they were open looks. The
Pat Patterson's plus minus in defense wasn't so good. He was driving me crazy at the beginning of the season. He was shooting so bad.
Yep.
It's like, you're a 3-point shooter, you got knocked down threes. But he brought in different levels. That's really what's key, too.
Are you an advanced metrics guy? You brought up plus minus and stuff?
No, I'm not. I mean, I look at more. I mean, you can't kind of discredit plus minus, I feel, because it says what you're doing on the floor, right?
Yeah.
But I'm not really a big analytics guy. Not that I don't believe in it, but I think that, also like.
Heat maps don't keep you up at night.
War.
Yeah.
stat or your wins.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not saying it's not effective, but I think, as basketball players, you're creatures of habit, right? And it's like, it's hard to kind of like change. Knowing that, I shoot a better percentage from this ball than 4, and if I'm trying to figure what's the best opportunity if 2 defenders are in front of me or the play's giving me this, I probably can make it if I get this, even though that's what you want me to do.
Mm-hmm.
It helps the game, though, without question.
Yeah, that's true, man.
You guys big analytics guys?
I know. I like it a lot because it gives you a different perspective of the game.
Right.
But I can't say it's like the be-all, end-all. For me, it's another set of data for you to kind of look at and learn different ways to attack a team, but it's not going to tell me what that player does exactly.
Exactly.
It can't account for what they do off the court, how they practice, like other intangibles. It doesn't measure.
Yeah, I'm down the middle. I mean, there's some old school guys like, Charles and Hill Brockby and those guys like who don't believe in it. And those guys are super, super pro. I'm kind of down the middle.
Yeah, I think that's the best way to go, especially because the best way to assess any situation is like have the most information possible.
Yeah.
Even if, you can't account for, the chemistry of the team or what they do in the locker room.
Yeah, and you also have to like watch the game too. I mean, like the numbers are in front of you, but if you don't see how it all plays out, doesn't help. Yeah, exactly. Right?
Sometimes bad shots, like, they show up as a made shot, but sometimes they're still bad shots.
And then you got guys like Kobe Bryant, who shoot a lot of bad shots.
Yep.
Right? But they still go in.
Right, so it's kind of deceiving, too, right?
Yeah, they're like anti-analytics players.
Gravis Vasquez is that guy, too, right? Yeah. It's like, no, yeah! He's my guy, don't get me wrong. But
he's been doing that since he was with Maryland, though.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, he drove Gary Williams nuts.
Yeah, there's situations that you can't account for in stats. Like, if the clock is running down and you have to jack up a three, sometimes if you're the go-to player, you got to do that two or three times a game.
And especially with the Raptors, where there's a lot of
Isolation.
What is their offense?
I don't know, man. I mean, not that I don't know, but I feel like the problem is that they're both, DeMar and Kyle are both good
isolation
players.
They need
right?
the ball. Both need the ball in hands.
You know, my concern is that the ball doesn't move often enough sometimes with the ball club. I mean, you know, I think
if you don't get to touch the ball, man, it's harder to shoot the ball.
I'm playing on a team right now. I won't say which team. And you play with ball dominant guys, and it's like, what happens is when you don't get the ball very often, you shoot it because you don't think you're going to get it back again, exactly. Right? So that creates bad shots on that player who doesn't get the touches, or they're not shooting the rhythm of the offense. So because guys dominate, so it's like the ball's going to move around. I mean, sometimes you know we saw when Terrence Ross is on, he's getting those corner threes. The ball's moving, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Don't even talk about Terrence Ross.
This could be for a while.
Yeah. But I mean, when the flow of the offense works, it's good.
How do you fix that? Or can you?
It's tough when,
hard when it's your two best players.
And it's also hard when it's like, I'm not saying Kyle's a hog by any means, but it's hard when, like, you know, it starts from there. Like, the two first people to touch the ball is DeMar and Kyle.
Mm-hmm.
As it should be, right? But it generally doesn't move a lot from there. I mean, you know, DeMar's got a great mid-range game. DeMar can post you up. So can Kyle. So it's like, it's tough. But you gotta keep everyone involved. You know what I mean? I think I think JV needs to get some looks in the post, whatever. To me, it's like, and I've seen Kyle do this sometimes, where like he'll like everyone get in the game and then he'll do his thing. Because Kyle could literally come down the court and score every time he wanted to, if he wanted to.
He just pulls away
from that. Let everyone else get their touches and get it, and then go for yours.
I don't understand why they don't use more like pick and roll situations. Like we saw more in the playoffs with JV, where a lot of times they would just run like Kyle up high. Like
right.
1-5 screen and roll, and JV would just dive to the cup, and that was it.
I know.
Whereas, like, if they did that with DeRozan, at least it'd open up the mid range. It would create so many more options, and I don't get why they don't do it.
Yeah, it's always
they did it with Biombo a lot. And the Biombo's big games, that's all it was, right?
It's all PNR dive.
Exactly. The other concern you have is JV on the pick and roll defense on the other side, which is.
It's a nightmare. It's not pretty.
it is not, exactly. So, I mean, you know, I hope he, we'll see how he does in the summer. I mean, obviously, he's representing Lithuania or whatever. I mean, all those reps off his game, hope it'll help.
We always talk about him, like, not getting his touches in the post. You even mentioned it. Like, how do we solve this? Like,
Stackhouse tried to, though.
It's really funny because you watch the possessions and, like, he's there and they just don't give him the ball.
Yeah, they just never give him the ball.
I mean, not a big part, probably a smaller part is positioning, but I mean, like,
do I need to, like, go to talk to these guys and show them the tape and, like, you know, I got Jonas.
Apparently, Stackhouse was barking about that all the time.
But
in summer league, you saw him do that with Poeltl.
Yeah,
Poeltl got the ball in the post.
And that's not a Raptors move. I don't know. I call him Ninja Poeltl.
It's Poeltl. Oh, it's Poeltl. I got it.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Poeltl.
So Stack's taking 9-5, right?
Yeah, that's a big move for him.
That's good.
I just want to hear the trash talk at the Hershey Center.
That's going to be great. You know, it's a great step for him, you know, because he was just an assistant coach, not being able to. You know, you get to coach your own team.
Exactly.
Is getting in
and
those
developing sports. Players. I mean, that's kind of probably what he's doing. He has a lot of stuff to share with those guys. So
yeah, and they're all players that are going to be bouncing between the 905 and the Raptors.
And I'm sure Bruno could use those hard talks.
Oh, man.
What do you think about Bruno? Honestly, when I watch him at Crown League, I know it's only Crown League in the sense where it's Summer League. But every time I watch this guy, he looks lazy. He looks aloof. I heard from a lot of people that he likes to party a lot and he's always at clubs.
I agree. I can't speak on that stuff, but I would agree with you on like what I saw at Crown League. And I mean, for me, it's like, to me, like being involved in Crown League, anytime a player is in the NBA becomes a Crown League, they should be just trying to kill everybody. Bennett did it, Kelly did it, Brady Hassel did it last year.
Yeah,
and I feel like because, you know, it's kind of like not a chess bumping such way, but you've got to start like I'm in the league and this is why I can do these things.
Yeah.
So I think Bruno had a really good first half. I think he had like 11, you know, like no, I his first game. But the thing is, and he doesn't have that killer mentality.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, he's longer than anyone who's covering him. You know, he should be killing everybody.
Is he D&3 bound to be that kind of player? Just strictly D&3? Like, what else can you do with this guy?
The problem is he's shooting way more threes. Than, like, he shoots a lot of threes
now, yeah.
He's fallen in love with that three-point shot. So, I think there's still hope, but, like, really, you got to look at it because his rookie contract's going to be up next year. So after next year,
they actually have to, like, actually evaluate his actual.
I don't think anyone's going to, like, come in and offer him a shit ton of money.
Me neither.
But, I mean, you know, I think you can't invest as much time in a guy and just let him go after that unless he's, like, mentally not there.
Because Megan McPeak, she's a 905. She's worked with you at Hang On, all that. I know that. She was saying that she thinks Bruno just gets way too down on himself all the time.
It could be. I mean, she has a better insight on him because she sees him every game, whatever. I don't know. I can't say. I just feel that, like, something needs to click in him. You know what I mean? I mean, not everyone has the motor or the fire or whatnot, but.
Yeah, but he doesn't have the it factor either.
Yeah, and physically, he's got the tools.
He has everything, and he just can't put it together.
I think he needs a little more toughness, too, in terms of, like, you know, just getting, like, frustrated a little bit, like, mental toughness.
I would love to see him on the floor, you know, like actually playing for the Raptors.
Yeah, but when you see him on the floor playing for the Raptors, what do you think?
Get him off the floor.
Yeah, get him off the floor.
You've seen enough to know. I mean, have you watched any 905 games? Not trying to put you on the spot.
Yeah, a couple of them.
So how has he looked when you've seen him?
Yeah, meh.
Right. So to me, it's like, and that's the thing. If you're in the 905, you should be like, Norm Powell goes 905, drops 3 points. Long range game, double doubles. Like, that's what I think that players of that caliber should be doing.
Not saying take the Jimmer Fredette route. Like, he's taking like 30 shots a night in the D League to try and get back.
Right, exactly.
But at the same time, like, at least he's scoring buckets.
Yeah, I think that. So I think Bruno should be like, the stat lines you hear from Bruno 905 should be impressive. And I don't know what his numbers were this year, but I know they weren't like.
They're all over the place. He got in foul trouble a lot, too.
Yeah, that's another thing. Because for a guy like him? You got to remember, like, the next level, he's not going to be able to do those things.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
That assignment's going to be way tougher to cover.
It seems like this year is like. Kind of like a year where you gotta, it's make or break for him. It feels a little bit like.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because if he underwhelms and they resign him, nope, it's like the expectation would be lowered or whatever.
Yeah.
But it is. He's gotta kind of step up and show something. Because honestly, 2 years away from being 2 years away, he has 2 years, right?
Yeah.
So.
You know, you gotta, he has to show something. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's like.
Like, then he's done.
He's done.
I mean, my thing is, like, I never really had a problem with the pick because I didn't feel there was anyone else who kind of, like, Rodney Hood was, I think, the only guy, arguably, who they could have drafted instead of him.
He's turned out pretty well.
But do I really, but at the same time, it's like there was no room for them to play. Like, if Bruno was amazing right away, where would he play? Like, Norm Powell only got to play because guys got hurt.
Yeah.
So it's like, when they drafted him, there wasn't room for someone to kind of come in. They didn't need someone to fill that void.
Yeah.
But he's got to start giving you something.
Norm Powell's also, like, wired differently, too, as opposed to Bruno.
Yeah, he has, like, the killer instinct.
If you put Norm Powell's mindset in Bruno's body,
oh my God.
Can you imagine?
He might actually have another KD.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You definitely have, like, a beast, for sure, right? I mean, like, you know, and he's another guy who's, like, he came into OVO Bounce, and he kind of did a Bruno. He didn't really, he settled for shots. I thought he was going to come in and, like, score 40 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is, because, like, on his Twitter, he tweeted, he's like, I'm thinking if I should go play in this or not. And I thought, okay, if he's going to go play in this, that means he's going to light it up and get a run in.
Yeah, he did a lot of letting the game come to him, which is cool. But for me, it's like, people want
to
see
you. Yeah, people came to see
you. And if you have that ability to, like, you know, enforce your will in the game, you should.
And also, it's just, like, great for you to get some buzz on the internet, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, hey, how many Drew League highlights or Shire League highlights are we, like, talking about or looking at? Or,
yeah,
or,
exactly.
Know, when a certain player who plays on the Knicks gets dropped.
Ah, you stole it. I was supposed to say that.
People talk about it, right?
I think when.
Showed it to Tyler Vernon. But I actually missed it. I was downstairs when it happened.
Oh, man. He tried to play it off like he was, like, hurt almost.
Yeah. I saw the video, though. I did
see it. You should have seen Stanley Johnson's face.
Really?
He looked at me, he was like,
but that's the thing, because I mean, and that's why I say you got to force your will, because guys are going to try and make a name for themselves off of you, and I'm not saying that's what was happening, but guys will try and do that stuff, so you got to come out and be like, yo, I am an elite player, I play in the NBA, this is what I do.
Yeah, you cannot guard me.
You cannot guard me.
What do you think about Norman Powell, like, moving forward, you know, like, he kind of jumped on the scene last year and got a few years left in him?
I like Norman Powell. Yeah. You know, I think... Obviously, the Miami series was tough for him, but, I mean, he didn't back down to Paul George at all.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this is a guy who's, like, this is NBA playoffs, and we know it's all high level. This is rookie season where he's kind of, like, went like this the whole season and shined in the playoffs, too. So, he likes to play defense, which is good. He's working on a three-point shot, which we saw improve throughout the season.
He just sounds like a great player to me. So, I was thinking with him on the Raptors, And like,
are you getting ahead of yourself right now?
No, I'm not getting ahead of myself.
Go ahead, go ahead, go ahead.
He actually is.
What do I do with Norman Powell if he continues to improve?
Don't worry. Don't
tell him what you want to do with Norman Powell.
If Norman Powell continues to improve, what do I do?
I know what's going to happen. That's why I'm getting ahead of myself. Hey, worry about that when it happens, though.
Okay.
Because,
I'm not saying
it's better to have more than not enough, right? I mean, when it becomes to a critical mass, then fine, but you want him to be at his optimal value before you have to trade any of them, right?
Okay. I wasn't saying trade anybody. I'm just, you know.
On other episodes you've said, let's trade them. I think they can play together.
You think they
can? I don't think they can play together.
I think they can make it work.
How?
Because Powell would literally be relegated to like a D3 player in a sense.
Okay.
And he would just match up against anybody on the court that they would need him to match up on.
But he's 6'4".
I know. But he also guarded Paul George.
Paul George was like 6'8".
Yeah, but who can really guard playoff Dwayne Wade?
Paul George is pretty. Come on,
I agree.
Paul George.
I think Paul George is like.
Exactly. He's right. Five. So, I mean, anyway, it was his first year, so I totally give him that pass, yeah. Whatever. There's lots of upside, I think. I think second round pick, they knew what they were doing when they drafted him. Yeah. DeLon Wright is the guy you want to see, but obviously he's out with his shoulder.
He was awesome at Utah.
For 4 months, so. And he was good in 9-5, too. So, I mean, you want to see that growth of these young guys, which is good. I mean, they got the future looking bright, and they got a lot of players right now doing stuff.
What's up with Masai being enamored with drafting guys with length? He loves wingspan.
He does. He does. I don't know, man.
I've noticed that since he first
got
here.
Well, I think the thing is it makes up for size. But I'm kind of still – I was really disappointed. This summer was the first summer I was, like, disappointed in Masai. I've been one of those creatures, like, doesn't matter what he does. He can do no wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I just really felt that the team needed to make a move to get better. I mean, the question, this valid question is, like, how? Who was out there? But based on – and I know that they will always say, him and Coach Casey, that they're not where they need to be. They're trying to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of feel like they still had to take that next step, and they weren't able to this year. So, you know, that's a question. I really would – I mean, they've done a good job drafting. They've got a good system set up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like trade some of that youth to, like, you know, get someone that can kind of contribute right now.
It feels like right now with the Raptors, it feels like they're in this weird in-between period where they can't really figure out what they want to do because they have all these young assets that we were just talking about. But then, like, my best players are Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, who are not necessarily young players. So, like, if I'm the GM, do I?
That's what you said. Are they in a win now? I feel that they are. I mean, like, this is, like, you don't know. I'm not saying that the talent they have is not going to get better in Norman Powell or Pirtle or DeLon Wright, but you have Kyle Lowry, who's, you know, arguably was on the Olympic team.
He's one of the
top 20 player in the league right now.
Mm-hmm.
Who is not getting younger and plays a very physical game, and his body is, you know, don't want to hold up for.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kind of like get players that are going to help make his job easier, I think.
Okay.
And I don't think that the young guys are ready to do that yet.
Right.
Might be a bit of a loaded question considering you work for them. How much of an influence do you think?
I'm contracted by it. I don't get it.
How much pressure do you think they put on Masai and them to kind of go out and try and win now? Because I know a lot of times.
I don't think, you know what? I might be naive here, but I think Masai's earned the right where he gets that trust. Just like what I said about how I believe in him.
Yeah.
I don't think ownership like questions his motives or his ability or his planning. And I think knowing his plan and his approach, that he looks long-term, and I think he's got them to think long-term. So I don't think there's pressure on him to do it. I don't think there's pressure on him to do anything. I mean, like, he's shown that he's built a competitive franchise that continues to grow and get better with a solid core. So I don't think there's pressure on him to, like, win now or, you know, pull the trigger. I think that he's earned that trust where he's going to do what's best for the franchise.
Because one thing him and I feel with the Raptors is that they don't really know what success is yet to them. Like, you could take the Memphis Grizzlies approach. Success is making the playoffs every year and turning a profit. Whereas teams like the Lakers, not really the Knicks, but like
Boston,
the premier teams, they're, it, right? Like, success for them is a title. Right. That's it. What is it for the Raptors, though?
Well, you got to remember, though, before this season, what was it? What was the success?
Make the playoffs. Get out of the first round.
Yeah, the first round. Yeah. Exactly. So now we went from getting out of the first round to conference finals. So I think they have. So there's it's probably somewhere in between, right? I mean, I think, like, you know, they got out of the first round, which was important for them to do. And then make the conference finals. So is the goal getting back to the conference finals? Is it getting out of the second round next year? Logic would dictate second round, right?
I agree.
But, you know, I think once you make the conference finals and, you know, you got a couple of games on.
Get that taste.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
Two games away from the finals.
But
man.
I think any fan will tell you two games away from the finals. I think it's kind of like fans want and what guys like us want and what ownership want are probably three different things.
Yeah.
Because fans are in the media mode. They want it now. They want it now, right? We can see a little more and they can see it more, right? I mean, they're looking at like how many more dollars will be freed up next season, next season. Who else is available? You know, like Griffin, we mentioned he's a guy, right? You look pretty good in a Raptors uniform right now. You change how that team would look. So they're looking at every single situation like years down the road. What we're looking at like right now and saying, I'm saying they should have got someone this summer. And it's like, we got next summer figured out. Don't worry, we got you.
Yeah, I feel like that's why they stayed out of this summer personally, is that 2017 is just better free agents.
The other thing I look at, Terrence Ross getting that deal last year, extension.
Poison pill, yeah.
No, but like that, like what would Terrence Ross have got this summer?
Oh, I think we got paid, like probably even 20 million, so we're up to match or whatever.
Like, exactly. So it's like maybe he's looking like a really good right. That's like a really good contract.
JV is a golden contract.
Mozgov's getting more money than JV right now.
Mozgov,
come on,
he lives in LA.
And he lives, yeah, come on, and he's like not even like quarter. I mean, Mozgov had one good run, and he still has the Blake Griffin stuff on his head.
Yeah.
So I mean, like
that good run was last year though.
Not even last year, the year before.
So
he didn't really play this year when Terrell Lou got there.
Like that's what it is, man. It's like teams. There's some teams who are desperate to have cash. Let me throw them at them. Look at Mike Conley. Is Mike Conley the best player in the league?
No.
Mike Conley top 10 player in the league?
No.
Top 15?
Maybe.
I feel like we could maybe squeeze him in, but not be generous.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, and I mean that's not to knock him. I mean, I'm glad he got his money. I've never mad at a player getting their money at all ever.
Yeah.
But you know. It's
I get it, though, for guys like Durant and like LeBron to not sign long-term.
Right,
for sure. Money is too great for them to commit to one spot.
And they could easily move around if they wanted to. Like, they've earned that right to have that flexibility.
Yeah. I hope Durant becomes a mercenary, personally. I hope he just goes around, like, starts helping franchises chase titles.
He may as well, because as far as I'm concerned, his legacy is dead to me.
It's dead.
Really?
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you don't go... They were one shot away from winning the championship. Mm-hmm. They don't need Kevin Durant. Right. You know what I mean? Like, it could have gone either way in Game 7.
Mm-hmm.
If they won... They wanted the champs again, big deal. But they don't need Kevin Durant. So for me, it's like, I would rather go to a team that I can say that I helped the team get over, like the Clippers.
Right.
Right? Or the Raptors or anyone. I'm the reason why we got over. No one's going to really give Kevin Durant credit when they win the championship because they're going to say they're the best team in the world. They have four, you know, Durant, you know, all those guys, like, I don't know.
That's why I think he's going to leave after he gets his rings.
Yeah, but.
And
but
try to rebuild his image like LeBron.
But it's like. But he could have still got a ring somewhere else. Even if he went to San Antonio.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
and I mean, you know, people can say the same thing, but it's like, you know, like, he could have gone anywhere and got a ring, even in 1 year or 2 years. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, LeBron didn't get his in Miami the first year. He got his second year. So it's like, if he went somewhere in 1 year, like, okay, let's just indulge me for a second. If he goes to Toronto, well, I don't know if they could beat him a little west, but they could, I think they could.
They could win the East.
Right. So... And they, and I don't know. I mean, he could go a number of teams where they, he could have got a ring in 1 or 2 years. Not the team where now we're saying they have to set a new NBA record and wins and win it all. And even if they win it, they sweep the whole playoffs. They're gonna say, "Oh well, of course they're the best team in the league." You know what I mean? Like, there's always gonna be that asterisk beside a question mark. Like, I don't know. So if you become the mercenary, it doesn't matter because it's like, well, you went to you went to Golden State. You may as well go to like everywhere else.
So yeah,
it's maybe we want next or whatever. Like,
can Russell Westbrook do like the same thing? Can he go to anywhere else and make them a title contender or win one? I don't think he can win one.
I think Russell is probably my favorite player in the NBA right now.
Mm-hmm.
But
is it the play style, the fashion choice, or
more so the play style, the fashion choice? But I'm scared. I love that Russell's not scared to be Russell.
Okay,
but I just look at the games when Durant was out and how Russell would have incredible stat lines, but they wouldn't get wins.
Mm-hmm.
So. I'm not saying he can't play with others or he can't make teams better, but I don't know if, like, he goes to Boston that they're going to be. I mean, Boston will be better for sure, but
yeah,
are they going to be champs? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think Golden State would still steamroll them.
Yeah.
It's like the immediate future.
Only if he goes to Cleveland. And then what do you do with Kyrie?
Like, those guys Russell Westbrook would not let LeBron handle the ball down the stretch. I got this. This is what he told him.
He probably would. It's LeBron.
Yeah, you'd have like, to back down, if it's, right?
Yeah, the respect is there where he can never say, you know, wave off LeBron, right?
That'd be great TV, though, if he did.
Yeah.
Well, let Jared Smith go in the Westbrook and Kyrie's the backcourt.
Yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of options. But it's such a... Westbrook seems to be, like, a player that you know, seems like he can fit everywhere until you actually see him. But then you'd see him play on the court, and then you'd be like, there's only a select few people
he
can play.
You know what? He played on the world championship team, the World Cup team, and like he wasn't an issue, right? It was ridiculous. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he's a wild card of the season, I think, really. What happens to him, where he goes.
Yeah. I think he's kind of like our AI. Like, the younger generation, like, I feel like he's our Allen Iverson, where he can do a lot of things really, really well on the court, and he can make himself better, but not always his teammates better. You can only put certain pieces with him, and it'll work. Because seeing a lot of times on the stretch, Durant kind of just hiding in a corner while Westbrook
takes the ball on his head.
Like, you can't hide a guy like Kevin Durant. You got to make that work. So I feel like only certain guys can play with Russell. And that's his great downfall.
Yeah.
Because he's amazing. Watching him play one-on-one or anything like that, he'll kill anybody.
You think he's getting traded?
Yeah. Do you think he's going to want to go for nothing? Think they're going to go for nothing?
Do you think they're going to get the extension?
No. Why would he stay there? Because they're not going to put guys around him. He's seen Harden, Durant, Ibaka, all those guys leave. Mm-hmm. He knows he's not going to put guys around him.
All right. So where do you think he's going to trade to then?
It depends a lot.
It depends on the offers. I mean, you know.
The new CBA is going to screw up a lot of things.
Yeah.
There might not even be a season in 2017, to be honest.
Mm.
Yeah, it's possible. That's a possibility.
Yeah, because they're really pissed off, the owners, about this whole Golden State thing. And it's their fault. Like, they agreed to, like, not escalate the salaries.
It's always their fault.
Keep the rookie scale the same.
I know.
Yeah.
They just got really ignorant, and now it's biting them in the ass.
Well, they never can be unified on anything. Yeah. They say one thing, and then they go just, like, do a dumb stuff.
They don't even want to show up to the meetings, half these owners, because, you know, send somebody else.
I hope there's a lockout, though, man.
Me too.
Me too. I want to see the Warriors play.
Oh, you'll see them this year.
But, like, I want to see them play every year. Yeah. Every year I want to see them play.
Is there anything else you feel we should talk about before we let you go?
I mean, man, you touched on everything that I do, so there's nothing for me to plug.
Well, if you want me to touch on one more thing that you usually do, I can do that for you.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
At the end of every Soul Shift
interview, basketball Nardwar.
Oh, man. You go, is it the shoes? So instead of me asking you, is it the shoes, because neither of us like really playing, what's your favorite shoe?
Oh, favorite shoe is like the Air Jordan 3 True Blue somewhere. These are my favorite shoes. Like, I love them. I don't play basketball in Jordans, unless they're like new Jordans. Cause, I never play, because Jordans aren't great shoes for basketball. Kind of basketball. Flat, right? Yeah. Favorite shoe to play in? I'm kind of a Nike guy.
It's okay. Kobe's are good.
The
low top Kobe's.
I mean,
they've had a lot of good
The Hyperdunks, I'm trying to think of what year. Hyperdunks generally almost always is like a good shoe every year. Right? It's like the basketball shoe.
Mm-hmm.
I miss the Hyperdunks a lot. Adidas is saying something right now, though.
Really?
Yeah.
What about Under Armour? Do you like the Under Armours?
Steph Curry 2s.
Steph Curry 2s, they haven't got the aesthetics down, but they're making a good performance. The Curry 2 is a good basketball performer. Like, it's good. Honestly, it's a good shoe. It's a good shoe for real. Aesthetics get a little tighter.
Mm-hmm.
But Adidas is like, I mean, and now they just signed Jamal Murray. They signed all those guys. Yeah. They got Wiggins. But the Crazy White Boost is a shoe. Like before, like, as I grew up, it was Nike. Nothing else was saying anything else. Now, the brands are stepping up. They're really stepping up, and it's becoming way more competitive. So,
you a low top or a high top guy?
I'm a little of everything. I'm more of like a high top or a mid. I wear lows, so I don't have a problem wearing lows too. But it depends on your game. It depends on what works for you and stuff too, right? So, it's all about like, honestly, I can say a million things, but it's really about what feels right for you.
Yeah.
So,
you're kind of like the soul man right now.
This guy's like knighting me now. He's the soul man.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like Soul Shift isn't just me. It's a team of other guys.
That are
really good. I mean, like, I've always been about like basketball and sneakers and culture and stuff. So I've just been fortunate to make it my livelihood, man. So
it's awesome. Want to plug a few things before we go?
Like what? Okay, Soul Shift.
Social media, your Soul Shift.
Find me on Instagram at Dwayne
Watson.
You're
so modest, man. You got so many things going on. You're just like, what do you want to hear from me?
It's like, I guess that's me, though. I mean, it's not even, too. I mean, like, I love what I do. I love basketball. I probably work a little too hard, but it's my stuff right that, now.
Man. Sleeping, you're dead.
Exactly. You're right. Exactly. Exactly. So, but I mean, like, you know, there's been so much growth in this city, in this marketplace, in this country with basketball, in terms of talent, you know, when we talk to the schools, media, all that stuff too. So, you know, this summer, there's traveling, there's OVO Bounce, there's like, there wasn't a time where you could like go see you know, like Norm Powell playing in summertime and
showed
like 1,000 people, which is fantastic. So that stuff's continuing to grow. So I'm just hoping to help kind of, you know, keep that going.
Yeah, you're doing a little more than just that.
I'm trying, man.
All right, Dwayne. Thanks, man,
Yo,
for talking with us. I really appreciate
me,
it. Hope to do this again.
For sure. Definitely. Let me know.
And that was our interview with Dwayne Watson. I hope you guys enjoyed it. There's a lot of compelling stuff in there that we talked about. The Toronto hoop scene, there's a lot of things about Crown League that I personally didn't know that I'm glad that I know now. We even got his thoughts on the Toronto Raptors, which is something that Dwayne is always willing to talk about. Actually, quite frankly, anything hoops related, like he says all the time, he is more than willing to talk about it. So we're hoping to have him back on again at some point to discuss everything basketball. A lot of great perspectives about Toronto basketball as well, like I said earlier. I hope some people find the favorite courts part useful. I'll have an article about that coming up later on next week. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to talk with Dwayne. I know DeMar enjoyed it as well. To plug a few things for him, if you want to find Dwayne on social media, he says there's only one thing he uses, and he's on it all the time. It's Instagram. You can find him at Dwayne Watson, all one word, on Instagram. Give him a follow. You can keep up with all his stuff. It's mostly hoops related, but it's all awesome content. And be sure to grab his quarterly magazine called Soul Shift. Dwayne, the Soul Man Watson. I'm hoping that nickname sticks for you, pal. But he is one of the biggest hoops heads and sneaker heads out there. So he combines basketball, sneakers, and culture all into one for a quarterly magazine. And there's lots of great stuff in there. As for us, that'll wrap up this edition of the TOTcast. I hope you guys enjoyed the interview again. If you want to reach out to me, you can find me on Twitter, at Chris O'Kranitz. If you want to reach out to DeMar on Twitter, you can find him at DeMar J. Grant. You can also follow the show on Twitter, at Tip of the Tower. You can also like our Facebook page, at Tip of the Tower as well. And if you like what you're hearing right now, please subscribe to us on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can find us by searching Tip of the Tower or the TOTcast. Either one will pop up and lead you right back to here. Again, I would like to thank everybody for listening to today's show. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Dwayne Watson. I know it's a lot of fun to do. We'll see you next week. Take care, guys.